The following is from Ghost Coast Studios, the world's first and only podcast network.
Oh, they want me dead. He is selling like Nancy Pelosi after a hot stock tip. Welcome back to Monday Night Fake Fights, where I, Eric Taylor, she, they, am doing a rewatch of the Monday Night Wars and continuing through the horrors, persisting to make it your fucking problem. This week's steamy victims are...
Hey, Remox. They, them, we are. Plural system, you'll probably get a little bit confused, but it'll be a lot of fun.
We are, yes. That's fantastic. I love that. It's like it's your the pronouns, but also just a statement of fact.
Yes.
I am so excited to have you on, Mox. I'm continuing my little run of non-derogatory Blue Sky Elder TMs. I had the posts, now I have the Mox.
You had Rem on?
I had Rem on a couple episodes ago. We had Rem. We had the entire Council of Rem.
That's fantastic. Yeah, no, like cut clips of Sage's episode, but didn't see that one come through. Awesome.
Sage was also fun. So yes, continuing down the line, y'all might Troy McClure. Y'all might know Mox as the folks that bring you the Weekend Craig. The fantastic elephant thread and all manners of artistic goodness that I adore. So I am so happy to have you here.
You can entertain people.
Yes, yes, you do, and you make my day brighter on a regular basis. So I'm happy to have you here. And for everyone else we just talked about, but we'll try not to confuse the Mox with producer Cat Mox as much as possible. But fuck yeah, welcome to Problematic 90s Wrestling for April 1st of 1996. What if any, we talked about a little bit, do you have as a history of wrestling, of fan, lapsed fan, anything of that nature?
definitely wasn't a fan, like, was a, let's see, that's April 1st, so was about 10 at that point. Mm-hmm. And so being a, you know, 10-year-old boy in the mid-90s, like, you're aware of wrestling, right?
knew the
broad strokes, probably had a Hulk Hogan figure somewhere in all of the, you know, piles and piles of action figures or whatever.
They issued them to us, yes.
Yeah, just check in first grade. Like,
here's your Terry.
But yeah, so there's some, you know, random episodes seen, you know, either flipping channels when, you know, nothing else to do, or had a couple of friends who were pretty into it, and, you know, we'd watch some episodes, and always had a little bit of trouble, like, biting down on some of the stuff. Like, actually, one of the most memorable things when it comes to wrestling as a kid, there's some episode, I don't know if it's already happened in the timeline or if it is going to happen later, but it has to do with The Undertaker. And one of these episodes that went over to a friend's house, we sat down, he was so excited to watch wrestling, and it was like The Undertaker showed whoever he was going to be fighting at WrestleMania his own body in a coffin, and they were like selling it as like this big, important, like, intimidation move, and
that just happened.
It's like, yeah, and like in my head, it's like, okay, like, wrestling is fake, yeah, sure, okay, but it's like, I kind of draw the line at necromancy.
Yeah, like, right.
Suspension of disbelief. Like, it's one thing, it's like, oh wow, these guys are actually fighting, you know, I can pretend, but like, when you say, like, this man is a necromancer, it's like, all right, no, he's not.
Big Daddy Cool had his Luke Skywalker in the cave moment. Yeah. But he is a lich
with it all. So just general, you know, broad strokes, things like that. who kind of just kind of became a mess during this era,
Yeah.
generally speaking.
As did, the country,
Yeah.
society, basically
And then
everything.
kind of like aged out of the at least that super prime 10-year-old audience, by the time like The Rock and stuff started coming along.
They tried to come with us, and some of us went along for that ride.
Yeah.
Because this, I mean, we can get into it. Raw is, I will say, I'm feeling attitudinal at the end of Raw. Like, this is I feel like the Attitude Era is upon us. But I will ask y'all, because it's tradition, would you like to start with meat or veggies? Would you like your Nitro or Raw first?
Let's see. We watched Raw first and then Nitro. Have some thoughts on both, but yeah. What's funny is Nitro felt a lot more raw in terms of production quality.
It had some
felt a
shining
lot,
spots.
a little undercooked, but
It had a rough week. It really did.
was immediately thrown, like kept rewinding or looking for a different link because it like starts this episode, or maybe we had the wrong, it's like it starts like in the middle of a fight.
Yeah, no, it's in medias res. All right, I think we're starting with Nitro. This is how we're
Okay.
going. Yeah. I
And
love
it's
it.
like,
It's organic, folks.
sure. It starts like in the middle of a fight. And so like we're like,
Basically.
wait, what's happening? So that went back and watched Raw first, thinking like maybe there's something here that we missed. No, there wasn't anything. It was
Like a
just
hidden
a
clue.
fucking fight. Like, figure it out.
Sometimes they do that. Yeah, no, there's no intro. We hop right into the fucking giant pointing his finger at Stinger menacingly. And
Love it.
Jimmy Hart outside up to no good. Sting looks awesome. He's like black and neon and spits in
Yeah.
Giant's face. And I'm just like, I don't know what's going on, guys, but I'm so here for this.
No idea what's going on.
And no one else does. They tried to tell us. I guess Jimmy Hart paid off Harlem Heat. And it was supposed to be a tag match. And it was
Like, yeah,
very.
they give you like this like recap of like, hey, here's what happened when you weren't watching, as though it's our fault. It's like, no, you didn't have the fucking cameras on, dog. Like,
What's going on here, buds? Like, you could, like, yeah, you're live, but like, you can control
like,
this.
hey, slackers, you weren't paying attention, but here's what happened. It's like, no, just fucking watching Raw. Like, this is your fault, not mine.
Yeah, because I thought it was messed up because he came in all fucked up. No, I bet you any money. All right, we're gonna keep going in a chronological order, I swear, listeners. But there are so many moments throughout this episode of Nitro where I'm just like, they're on their back foot, like they fucked up, something's fucked up. And you're helping me put this together, folks, that this is kind of, I feel like they started late. Or they started early, like they started the show earlier than the time was on for the airing because they were live. And they're like, we have, they
And it
spend
is
the
actually
rest of
live?
it.
Like they did that show like
Nope.
straight live?
Nitro is straight live. Raw is also live this week. Nitro is live every week. That's what gives them the advantage usually because Raw only does live after a pay-per-view. And WrestleMania was last night in our timeline. So like, it's like that. That's what we're getting. That's why they're live. And Vince is just fucking jazzed because his boy toy won. And yeah, we'll get there. We'll get there. So yeah, apparently there was some payoff. So yeah, that happened because they fucked up the timing. And this match is all right.
All right. So obviously it's mid-90s. Everything is problematic at this time, and as though it's not still in American culture.
Oh,
But
it's even worse.
having not had, much experience with wrestling and stuff, and definitely having not seen anything in 2 decades or whatever, the first thing we see is the black wrestlers take a bribe. Was just like, okay, like we're like really jumping in, aren't we? Like, okay, this
It's gonna get so much worse. There in the future, there is a team in the WWF called Crime Time, and it's exactly what you're thinking.
Jesus Christ.
Rest in peace, the Shad. He died like trying to save his kid from drowning. It's a
Oh,
sad
damn.
story, right? Wrestling is full of tragedy. Welcome to my fun show, folks.
Oh.
Again, like I said, the horrors persist, and we're like fucking bet. You know, we got horror. We lived through horrors. It was called 1996 wrestling. I've seen shit. But
like you wouldn't believe.
I've seen brother moments like you wouldn't believe, folks. So yeah, in the meantime, though, this match, surprisingly for me, kind of fucks really hard from the start. Like Stinger does a shoulder chop to a leg from the top rope. So he's like basically doing a swan dive, like header at the mat, and he manages to pull it off. And I'm like, all right, that was pretty cool. Right off the bat. And within 2 minutes.
Yeah, that was the first thing that like jumped out was, so it was like immediately a lot more energetic. Just like I said, like we started Nitro, and then because it seemed like the time was wrong, went back and watched Raw, and then jumped back into Nitro.
Yeah.
And immediately it was like, whoa, this is like, this is,
it, it's, like, this it is, really this is.
And like, it was this weird hot, cold, hot, because it was like hot, like we're jumping in. It's like, wow, this is energetic, whatever. And then there was immediately like a couple of like very clearly poorly choreographed or like poorly made shots and, you know, just taking a hit that definitely did not land at all, like 6 feet away from your face. And you're like, oh, no, it hurts.
And everyone's, the camera guys are off. You know what I mean? Because like that's, this is like, sometimes that's what wrestling looks like in person. Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing about live TV, right?
And like sometimes that's what it looks like in person. You miss a shot, but like the camera angle is supposed to hide that. It's like, it's like magic, you know, like performance magic. It's part of it is how you're, the angle at which you're viewing the
action. Where are you looking? Where are you putting the camera? Where is everybody going to be?
And Nitro has been just fucking that up all week this week, but it's a fun match though.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. And it was like, there was a lot of moments where I'm like, all right, this Fox, they're doing it. This is, and then there's moments where I'm like, what the fuck was that?
Like, and kind of like the finish of it, just Lex shows up to like have his back, and like the ref just like throws it out, and it's like, okay, what the fuck? Even what
sort of like a movie in the 70s? It just sort of ends.
Yeah. Speaking of movies in the 70s, they Tarantino us, because then we come back from commercial and we see the footage of Jimmy Hart doing a hate crime by paying off Harlem Heat. and like, what the fuck? It's so weird. And then finally we get our first look at the boys, and Pepe is in a leopard print cowboy outfit that honestly just looks great. I love that fucking thing so much.
That was something else. Was not prepared for a tiny dog in a cowboy hat.
I really, really love catching people off guard with Mongo, this huge football player with his little fucking like Paris Hilton lapdog. It pleases me to no end.
Yeah, I mean, like, yeah, they cut to the booth and just like, what the fuck am I looking at here?
It's a motley fucking crew, is what that is. Yeah.
And like in the middle of the episode, or I guess, I mean, I don't know how chronologically we're planning on going, but like just like all of a sudden mid-fight, just a random non sequitur, just Bobby's like, and I quit.
We'll get there. Oh, that's fun thing. That's a fun thing. All right.
I'm so confused.
Oh, me, as was I, and we find it was on purpose, but Nitro keeps up the pace and the banger level, basically, because we come back to triangle tag match.
Things are happening so fast that stuff like that's happening, and they're talking over each other, and like, yeah, we'll get back to it. Whatever the hell you're talking about, like, we'll get back to that. Let's take a look at this hit.
Everyone's like on one, basically. But as far as the booking too, like, we come back and it's a three-way tag match with the Legion of Fucking Doom, the Steiner Brothers, and the Nasty Boys, like three of the biggest dudes they have. Even though the Nasties are big in different ways and not, they don't hit as strong. But like, I'm thinking like WCW has the opposite problem, like, of the tag team division at the Fed, because like, we'll talk about it when we get there. The tag team division at the WWF is not great right now. And a lot of it is that, like, guys that, these are all guys who were in the WWF and now are here. And it's like, oh, well, now I understand why all of his guys left. And it's awesome over here. Bobby asked, what's up?
Yeah, I was curious, like, what is the breakdown? Because, like, obviously, you know, I know, like, Hulk and whatnot, like, obviously used to be WWF guys, how did they end up here? Like,
oh, fuckery.
Like, honestly, the only, like, real breakdowns we know in terms of, like, it's, like, Robert Evans is, like, behind the bastards on, gives enough, and but he... it's, like, or it's, like, 90% of our wrestling knowledge in terms of, like, the background stuff.
And he only had 6 episodes. He could scratch it. That's the thing. This is why I make a podcast, you guys, is that, like, there's so much, and I need to know. So, like, but it became kind of the mantra of understanding the Monday Night Wars, which is what we are watching, is that these two competing companies are fighting each other live for, like, viewers every Monday. And, like, that's an actual, like, war they're going after, these two billionaires trying to screw each other with wrestling. But, like, the overall...
So they're on, what networks were each of them on?
So, like, Raw was on USA, I think. At
USA, okay.
And TNT was Nitro. So, okay. Turner had WCW, and right. Vince owns the Fed and contracts out to USA. They switch around a lot. Now they're on Netflix, and it's a fucking ordeal. but it makes it, I'm sorry, the fact that they're doing all this shit with Netflix makes making this show so, like, I'm going to be pissy about it. So, but long story short, all of this comes down to that one time, a long time ago, making a movie about wrestling called No Holds Barred, Vince McMahon and Terry Hulk Hogan Bollea did a lot of cocaine and steroids together, and they've got together, and they became best friends over their love of poop jokes and assaulting women and the business of professional wrestling. And they became best buddies, and they got together, and they made a bunch of money over, you take a real big guy, and Hulk Hogan slams the real big guy, goes, yay, America, and we make millions of dollars. And it worked at one time, so we're just going to keep doing it over and over and over and over again until it stops working. And then it started... Yeah, right. And then it started to kind of stop working a little bit. And it was like, oh shit. And Vince is like, well, I gotta find new Hulk Hogan. And Terry is like, brother, like it is the kind of thing where, like, Vince, I mean, who's gonna fuck who first? Right. And more or less they 69. And long story short, Ultimate Warrior never happened, unfortunately, for Vince. And he ends up going into, like, a bunch of, like, the worst years of business they have. We started our show in the biggest lull in the history of the company, pretty much, because Hulk leaves. He fucks him back. And, like, he leaves and goes to his competitor, Turner, who had just bought WCW. And Turner used his money to get a big paycheck for Hulk, and even better, he gave him guaranteed money, which is a thing that does not happen in wrestling. Mm-hmm. They are independent contractors. There is no guaranteed money, and Vince would, that's not that Vince makes money by fleecing talent this way.
Sure.
So, like, he did that, and he gave, this is the kicker, and what would ultimately be one of many reasons why WCW lost the war, they gave Hulk Hogan final creative control on him. And, like, in Hulk Hogan sucks butt in, like, in not the fun way, and he's an egotistical racist piece of shit, and it leads to just some of the most ridiculous things being on television, because, brother, it's in my contract, I gotta go home.
So is his pivot down the line to Hollywood, that's his own decision?
It's a mix. A mix. What's been fun about your episode 31. What's been fun about our journey so far is that for a while there it worked, because he went to WCW and he's like, he took all the Hulkamaniacs with him. People still loved Hulk, and they loved seeing him against other people that they haven't seen him yet. It's like that fun new thing. What if my favorite guy could fight my favorite guy from over here that was never supposed to happen? It's like when Spider-Man came in the Civil War movie, you know? Sure. It's like, oh shit, I never thought this was going down. We're getting Hogan and Flair again on not Vince. So, like, this is fantastic, and everyone liked it for a while, but unfortunately, Hulk sucks. The people running WCW at the time sucked. A guy named Jim Hurd literally, like, ran a pizza company before this. That's, like, how he made his money. And, like, he had no purpose being in charge of wrestling. and Hulk having final say, and like the booking. So the people who write the show, basically who book the matches, they're like, right. they're called the bookers. So like booking was all over the place and it was just a mess. So like after a while we got to where we are now, where they're like, they gave it to this new Eric Bischoff guy, the middle chuckle fuck in the boys. And he's starting to turn it around. He's like, give me a show that goes head to head against Vince and I'll watch him. And that's what started the war and why we're watching on the show. But it's still this liminal space where people are fucking tired of Hulk Hogan for the most part. Like he gets a lot of cheers, but he's not Hulkamania anymore.
Yeah, that much you can tell. Like that much could even coming into it cold, even just knowing enough to remember that Hulkamania was such a thing, right? Yeah. And then seeing the way the crowd reacts and whatnot was definitely not what we remember from being like a little kid.
It's very like, stale at this point, and that's what leads to the Hollywood thing, is they go, well, you know, they're going to boo you, then we're going to have to make you a heel.
Yeah, yeah, and that's just that like, no greater like representation of it than just that fine curtain of golden threads that is what's left of his hair. It's just a very thin, like, you know those beaded curtains you're not really hiding anything, but you know it's just there.
He brings new levels to Skullet. But to sum it up, like, the whole war is the fact that they scorned each other, and now Vince is trying to rub his new Hulk Hogan's in Terry's face, and Terry's trying to be like, I don't need you, I don't miss you, brother, and doing all this stuff in WCW, and they're just fighting back and forth. It's a lover's quarrel, is what it is, and it makes for fun, damn fine TV sometimes. speaking of... Bobby asks what the rules are about this back to the match we were talking about. That was a fun tangent. And Eric's like, there are no rules, but like there are rules. And like Mongo and Bobby are like, no, dude, there's rules. Mongo's like, no, they could take anyone. He's like, thanks, that's all I wanted to know. And they're like reaching across the Bischoff aisle. They normally hate each other, but they're like, Eric's acting really weird tonight. He is. And I bet you it's because they had a fucked up production and he was just nervous as shit. But but the match is basically as advertised. It's Steiners and LOD doing their shit, and they're known for working stiff in thus really laying in the hits, you know, more than you might need to. So this is like brutal wrestling. But suddenly this is very important. I couldn't pay attention to the match anymore because I saw a sign in the crowd that kind of changes history for me. So I'm sure you're aware of Austin 316, yeah?
Yes.
How could you not be? we were roughly the same age. It sounds like, it's like, so that hasn't happened yet. That happens at King of the Ring in 1996. So that hasn't happened yet. Now we have seen John 316 signs in the crowd because that's a thing people, evangelicals, were doing.
Yep. They were doing everywhere.
And for the longest time, I was like, okay, well, that's Austin. Is like, all right, Austin 316 says kicked your ass. Well, during this match, in the crowd, someone holds up a Pillman 316 for Brian Pillman, and I got chills. Like, he's like, Austin blamed the bit for a different wrestler, and I was like, I've never caught that.
It's like a glimpse into an alternate dimension.
Yes,
like it's like Dancing Bears sort of thing.
Yes, absolutely. It was like, what happened? And got to, like, what the fuck? Oh, this is so wild. But like, this match is whatever. It's fun. It, like I said, as advertised. It went on too long.
Long fight.
It was really bad. But like, Brian Knobbs seems to eat clotheslines from various Steiners, and like, there's a lot of that. We go to commercial with Scooter Boy doing a Steiner. And I will say that Brian Knobbs' credit. He has a great bulldog, and he took like Plexus brothers, didn't die. So like, that's impressive, because like, I have a similar type, Brian Knobbs, and I'm pretty sure I'd die if I took Plex from noted transphobic Steiner.
Yeah, I mean, like, that was the other thing. Like, you know, in that era and stuff, there was kind of two, like being on the schoolyard and whatnot. It was like in terms of people being wrestling fans or not, and it's like there was the, oh, wrestling's all fake and yada yada yada. And but then there was like that secret third thing, different than the other two, which was like, yeah, it's fake, but holy shit, like that's impressive that they can get thrown from 30 feet, you know, like that they can just get bodied over and over and over again and get
And
up
keep
and keep
doing it.
acting, keep
No, that's
doing
the
improv.
it's the power that's the power of pharmaceutical medicine and the
Just a
fighting
shit ton of
spirit.
gear and cocaine.
Yes. And as it's a good segue, because like as I'm typing that, there's not much going on in this match. It's and like Brian Knobbs like is doing all right. He Rick Steiner goes to give him a belly to belly suplex off the top rope, and instead LOD hits both of them and sends them tumbling to the outside in the ugliest way possible. And like Knobbs is like an inch from losing his eye to the steel steps. And I was like, holy fuck, this that is wow, Knobbs. And then in all of the confusion of this is amazing. This is why I fucking love wrestling. I am cackling. I love this shit so hard. Public Enemy, which is like the ECW hardcore version of Nasty Boys, basically, attacks the Nasty Boys, and one of them is dressed as Knobs, rolls into the ring and lets himself get pinned so they lose. Mongo calls him the anti-Knobs. And I'm just like, oh my God,
Well, like that
holy
was super
fuck.
tight, but the thing was, like, we were talking about like the camera and stuff like that, it didn't get caught. Well, like,
They did you
by the
didn't
time it
see what was going
happened, it's
on.
over, and it's just like, wait, what happened? And he needed to find out from a replay. Meanwhile, if you know, if there was some very basic stage direction and like the directing team knew that this was going to happen, they would have had a camera in the general area, like even just pointed at the ring, like just.
Eric Bischoff, the Mock Syndicate's coming for your head 30 years later.
It
Like you fucked up, boy. You fucked up.
because
But
like
like
it was
I
a
yeah,
great
it's bad.
twist, it was a
It's a
really
great
good
twist.
twist ending, but you missed it, you know. But we were just like at the beginning of the episode, like we didn't get to find out that this bribe had happened until X post fact.
So
Now
like
we're finding out
everything's
like, oh,
off.
there was some sneaky ending. It's like, well, what was it? You were showing me something else.
Everybody's off. It's like the camera guys are off by like 30 seconds, like off sync, you know?
It's just a complicated
the it's not
joke. Yeah,
latching up to the lips, you know? Oh, that's so wild. But I mean, it was a great match otherwise. It just went on too long. 20 minutes in though, and I'm really loving Nitro, but then they threaten me with Hulk Hogan and the Booty Man versus Boston Bob, Kevin Sullivan, and the Enforcer Arn Anderson. No silly name for Arn Anderson because I like the cut of his jib and I want him to pose glob me, which is a thing he did theoretically to Cody Rhodes. They come out unfortunately to the Dungeon of Doom in Anderson's Horseman. Bad for you because it's a really a banger and a half. It's like I was like, oh, Mox didn't get Horseman theme. That's sad. But Woman and Liz are out and they look amazing as usual. I will say we're talking about how shitty the production was. I did enjoy that there was like, did you catch the yellow light lens flare from the camera operator to kick off Hogan's entrance?
No.
Oh, it's a shame. Like that's a fine eye to detail wasted on Terry Bollea and Ed Leslie. And it was like the one really good production thing the whole show, and then they just fucked up the rest of the
So we were
night.
like scribbling down some notes as we went.
Yeah.
One of them that is highlighted is her name seriously just Woman?
Yes, her name is Woman. I've had to tell the I had to explain this last week too. Kevin Sullivan, Boston Bob, as I call him, had like a devil cult worship faction in a Florida wrestling promotion, and
Okay.
he's married to Woman. Her name at this time is Nancy Sullivan, and they like her name in the stable was just like Woman, like this is Woman, and like it was like very like primal and like dark and satanic, you know. And she's Woman, and she's like one of the best valets to ever do it. Unfortunately, she becomes Nancy Benoit and is killed by Chris Benoit in one of the most horrific things to ever happen in the history of wrestling. Yeah. So, like, what woman is one of my all-time favorites and has like one of the worst ends in a business full of bad ends. But yes, Kimberly Page has been called the booty babe. And like I said, I feel bad for her, but her outfit at least looks fucking amazing because it's like if Luigi was a sexy lady Power Ranger in the 90s was how I put it before I cut
Sure.
out.
Yeah, no,
I was like, okay, I kind of have respect for that. And also, you know, not redacted. So yeah.
that was one of the other things that the other notes that I wrote down is if we need to hear the word booty man one more goddamn
Oh
time,
God.
I.
It literally happened to me where I was just watching it and one of them said booty man and I just started giggling like God damn it, dude.
It became, they said it so many times that you know how you just say a word over and over again, it loses all meaning? Like you just say the word spoon 15
Yeah.
times in a row, you become convinced that it's no longer a word. Booty man
Yeah,
is going to
no.
be echoing through the halls of our mind for the next
Yeah.
month and a half.
You know, and I think that like the more times Ed Leslie said it to himself, the less meaning he had in wrestling, and I feel bad for him because he used to be a proud gay barber, from what I can tell in the Fed. He was the Brutus the Barber Beefcake. So like, yeah, oh how the mighty have fallen. Speaking of the mighty falling, this is where we get to the point where we come back from commercial, and Bobby says he's retiring from broadcasting. And
Right.
Mongo just says goodbye, which is a good bit. Everyone just kind of seems nonplussed, like he's crying wolf, and like Mongo says it's his last night till next week. And I was just like, I feel like this is going to lead to a storyline or something, but whatever.
Yeah, I'm like, wait, what's happening? Like, I wrote down like Bobby Keenan is just quitting? Question mark. What in the name of fuck? Question mark is my note.
Yeah, and I was like, well, I know he doesn't, so what's going on here? And so I was like, even my moats, I was like, keep an eye on that, Garrick. Like Bobby's up to something. Bobby's up to something wheezily. And he's also on fire tonight because Booty Man and Hogan lock arms over each other's shoulders and hit a double big boot on Taskmaster. And this is where I'm trying not to laugh too loud. It's late. Bobby fucking Heenan, King of the Haters. And Hogan is his number one target. He says that is the two ugliest Rockettes I've ever seen. And I lost my fucking shit. I had to pause it, and my kid was like, "What's matter?" I'm like, "You don't understand how funny this was." Eric says that Bobby Heenan is on one on his last night, and I was like, "Yes, he's kind of losing it, you know." So like, okay, maybe he really is quitting. This match is a slight variation on something that WCW does a lot, which is legends get their shit in various combinations. So I'm like, I've like kind of just dozed out and just like give commentary my full attention because Bobby is apparently he's having his last night on Nitro, and I love Bobby, so I was like, I'm paying attention to Bobby. I don't give a fuck about the booty man. Oh, I do have to th say though, as soon as I type that down, Mago says something fucking horrendous. he says that someone should go tear that dress off the booty babe, but that might be too racy for TV.
Oh my God.
And
Yeah.
so, yeah,
They circle around
somewhere.
that. Like this whole segment and kind of the whole episode, it was a the cavalcade of people committing to bits even though everyone around them is not biting,
Yeah.
right? Like, you've got Bobby ret quote unquote retiring and
Yep.
no one's biting on the bit, but he keeps going at it so that he can eventually have a payoff, right?
Yep.
You've got someone, I don't know, it might be too racy for TV. He does that several times.
Yeah.
Something along that, like, says something along that, trying to get someone to riff with him on it,
Yeah, and
but
it ain't happening.
no one bites. And so he makes the joke again, like, in 30 seconds or a minute. It's like, right, guys? Like, it'd be great if someone ripped her dress off, right? Like, no, we're not going to say that on television. You're
Yeah,
not going
stop saying that
to
on
trick me.
television. Somewhere Vince is going, yeah, that sounds great. Write that down. I like that. like you're giving it away. And as if they knew that Kimberly was being done wrong and dirty by the boys, the crowd starts a booty babe chant. And it was my favorite part of this whole match is like they're chanting for booty babe. I'm like, all right, that's worth it. But I'm just getting fully bored with this. And then Hulk does his thing, boots everyone. And then I was like, okay, how are we gonna get the fucky ending? Because it's Hulk. Like I said, he has to have the fucky ending because no one can beat him clean. And no one else wants to necessarily lose to him, so it has to be something weird. And they have this thing going where woman likes to have people use her shoe to kill people. It's kind of hot. Right. You know, so it's a thing. So there's a distraction. Kevin gets woman's heel to stab Hulk again. But at the same time, the booty babe gives Hulk a platform heel. Brother, like power.
Everybody knows that you know we've all been on the playground. We know platform beats heel.
Yeah, exactly. It's heavier. Yeah, it's physics. It's more velocity. That's more weight. You know, it totally makes sense to me. And I'm not sure you're probably not terribly familiar with modern wrestling, but there is a woman named of Timeless Toni Storm who believes herself to be an old timey actress. And she always likes to say, remember, everyone, remember, ladies, chin up, tits out, and watch for the shoe. And I just instantly was like, I hope she's, like, smiling somewhere. Like, seeing these guys come at each other in the middle of the ring with two shoes. And, like, Hulk blocks the heel and hits him with the platform. And I'm like, Toni Storm! Toni Storm, Toni, someday your day will come, my lady. And it was just so weird. Like, I'm pleased. Hulk gets a victory, whatever. They go again, they do this thing. This is another one I took note. They fucked up, Mox. They go to replay, but then they excitedly go, no, go back to the ring. They're still fighting. And then go right back to the replay. And it was like, what the fuck?
And then at the end, you know, after the match is done, they have the, you know, they're like teasing something upcoming.
Oh, right? God. Oh, when they're talking to Gene, when they do the screamy boy talk. Yeah.
And it is like, I mean, we're talking about like gaps in production quality and no one's talking to anybody. No one's making any, you know, like there's so much improv going on in the ring right now. Like you've got
Hogan, which is part of wrestling, but
yeah, absolutely. But like Hogan is carrying that bit, like is saying things and like trying to like pass the mic and saying nothing or nothing that makes sense, and Hogan's like, all right, I do, all right, brother, like I'm gonna keep talking for a bit.
Wait, Hulk Hogan carrying Ed Leslie in a wrestling situation? No way. that's literally their whole careers. I feel bad hating on Ed Leslie because like his biggest, he just made so many mistakes. Most of them were being friends with Terry Bollea. But also he made mistakes telling us that something's going to turn the tables and bring a little satisfaction. And he just needs Terry to be his brother next week because he has a super secret booty man match. And then he again says satisfaction. And I'm like, is it a Mick Jagger match? What are we? I don't know what is going on. It's not good.
And like, it was so frustrating. All right. Like, watching this, obviously, we hadn't watched last week's or whatever, and we're not going to watch 2 weeks from now or whenever it picks back up again or whatever. So we're just blind, and there's this cliffhanger ending, right? Of just some sort of super secret type of match coming up that is, there's no information given as to what it's going to be, which fine if that's like part of, you know, the story, right?
Yeah,
but it seems like the booth doesn't have any idea, right? And it doesn't seem like they're like kayfabing, but they don't have any idea, right? It doesn't seem like they know, but they're trying to pretend and amp up. They seem to honestly have no idea what the fuck Booty Man is talking about.
This is the other thing, is this is the first time that Booty Man, Ed Leslie as Booty Man, has talked on the mic, as far as I can remember. And and this is what happened.
It's like, if I'm the director, right, and, you know, like, mapping out this night, and obviously there's going to be slips, and there's going to be improv, and there's going to be all sorts of vamping and whatnot, at least, hey, main character is going to talk about future thing that's going to be, you know, like, here's all you need to know, there will be a secret whatever, here's just pretend, you know, like, you're not going to know what it is, but really amp it up. But they seem to not even just be amping it up. They just seem to be like, what the fuck is he talking about? What sort of secret match is he talking about? We don't know. The audience doesn't know. The booth doesn't know. It seems like Hogan doesn't even know. No one knows.
It's like they're trying to build a wall, like a long wall, but they only have the 20 bricks. And yeah, so they just keep bringing the bricks from the backside over to the front to try to like, see, it's going somewhere. And I was like, I don't know, but like, in the beginning, what are y'all going to? I mean, we'll find out next week. Well, 2 weeks from now, because there's no Nitro next week. That makes me sad.
Did you ever see the one of the early SNL digital shorts? It's like the PSA for peyote.
No.
Okay. The whole bit is a dude is like standing on an edge and like his buddy's talking up at him like, don't do it, don't do it, and whatever. And then eventually the payoff is he's on like just a curb.
Oh,
like,
my and it's God.
Just a full camera trick. Like it's just like the way it's framed and makes it look like he's gonna jump off a building, but he's just on a curb. And that's what this whole like cliffhanger ending feels like. It's like we zoom out and it's just Booty Man standing on a fucking curb.
It might be. I will let you know next week whether or not he was just on the curb. So
excited to find out.
Oh yeah. So speaking of nonsense, though, it's a Ric Flair match. Walking. We were talking about cocaine and beer. Is the walking bag of cocaine? It's the main event. Woo indeed. It's a world title match versus the total package of hot dogs, Lex Luger. And we'll see how this goes, because like Lex already has two belts. He wants to be Lexi three belts, apparently. And there you go.
I was a little bit confused as to the rules, right?
Yeah.
Because Lex is trying to get Flair's belt, right? To get three belts. But how come Flair can't get Lex's two belts?
Because it wasn't booked that way, damn it. In kayfabe, they'd be like, well, the commissioners, the title commission, the championship commission, blah, 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 blah. Well, they just said blah 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 that we can't blah 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 blah. Look at the dog. You like the dog? Woo. It's got a little cowboy hat. Woo. See, all right. Look at the bird. All right. Wait. So yeah, they don't think about it too hard. You know.
Wait a minute. Like, how come Rick's the only one putting anything into the pot here? Like,
right?
Down at a poker table, you don't get to just, hey, if I win this hand, I get your house. Okay, what do I get? Fucking nothing.
I'm trying to think of it from Rick's perspective, he has the world title, he has the ladies, he has half of Macho Man's money, he has Macho Man's ex-wife. What does he need with your U.S. title? You know, like, yeah. So, like, he doesn't fucking care, and he's gonna beat you anyways. Woo, you know? So, like, yeah, exactly. It's the whole thing. But, like, not everyone loves Rick, because this lady... Rick goes to try to get some love from the fans and shit in the crowd, and this lady in a Mickey Mouse shirt and the most amazing glasses is just screaming at Flair that Lex is going to kick his fucking ass. And I just love wrestling. That. I love wrestling so much, because that was on live television, folks. Can't take that back.
Like that was one of the things, is like being a kid, watching what little wrestling we did, like seeing not only friends were watching and like entertained, but like would kind of envy the people who are like there and so given in to the story and the, you know, whatever, that they are mad at Ric Flair. Like this shit actually wants to tell him to go fuck himself.
Like, I didn't catch where they were live from. I'm sorry, folks. I'm not a professional.
You
knew what this was. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I don't think Cleveland is Flair country. Flair has lots of Flair country. Like, he does. I was just on a podcast talking about how Flair running as a Democrat would turn the South blue. Because, like, it's Flair. It's fucking Flair. It's Flair. Like, what are you going to do? You know, like, everyone loves him. Apparently not Cleveland. Cleveland wants him to
not
get his
Cleveland.
Fucking...
It's a tough town. It's a tough town.
It's good stuff.
And, like, it kind of envied those people as, like, a kid.
Like, would love to fucking scream shit at Ric Flair, the piece of shit. Like, yeah, I would love that.
Not only would love to scream shit at Ric Flair, but would love to, like, believe in Ric Flair enough to scream shit at him, right? You know, just like, you go to Six Flags, I'm like, yeah, there's, you know, like costume superhero, you know, bad guy and stuff, but you're not telling Lex Luthor to go fuck himself, right? Yeah. You know, because he's just an actor dressed up as a supervillain. That's not a person that I need to like start shit with. Meanwhile, wrestling fans get to see a physical human being in the flesh and be like, I fucking hate you.
Yes.
Like, why?
Because I can, because you want me to, because it's why I'm here. I'm here to hate you. Have y'all ever been to a live wrestling match?
There was not sure anymore, honestly, because I honestly the time vortex that is COVID.
Naturally.
Like it still feels like last year was 2019. Down here in Austin, there was a thing called Party World Wrestling.
Okay.
Which was like an independent wrestling league, like this tiny. And so me and friends would go sometimes. I went a couple of times.
So you know the energy, like you're saying this because like that's absolutely the energy. Is like you are there to heckle them. Like it's
there
like
to heckle.
It's you are expected to. You're expected to scream in Ric Flair's face because he is a bastard, and you should know it. You are right, Mickey Mouse lady. You are right. It's so good. And like you can't I feel like you don't get to do that at real sports anymore. If you ever did, you know, like people get like fined and shit. You get kicked out. Like this is like, no, mm-hmm. Bring it. Call me a piece of shit.
No, like there is all right, so if you follow us on Blue Side during the summer, you're a gigantic fucking Mets fan. And so a few years ago, whenever David Wright retired, his last at bat was a foul out to the first baseman of the Marlins, who was just some nothing first baseman. Don't remember his name, nor will I ever justify him with knowing his name. But it was just some redheaded person with an Irish last name. And he was the enemy of the New York Mets organization for as long as he remained a professional baseball player. He would just get booed relentlessly for catching, you know, our captain's last at bat was a pop fly. Like, he didn't need to run and get that. You didn't need to do it. This was a game that didn't matter. You could have just let that and given him another chance to, like, go out as a hero, but you caught that. And so we hate you. We hate you so much, and we hate you so much that even though, like, here at a minor league park, because, like, we're in Austin, Round Rock's the local team, they're the AAA affiliate of, I think at that point, it was the Astros, and so we're watching the AAA affiliate of the Marlins playing the AAA affiliate of the Astros, so this dude is not at City Field. He's not in New York expecting to get heckled by Mets fans, you know, whatever. He's down in the minors again.
Oh my God. And they're still and getting
there is just a random fucking dude in the fucking stands just screaming profanities at him. Holy and that's me.
Yes.
Because I hate him. Like, he was so confused because it's the minors, so the parks are tiny, and we're like 10 feet from each other, and I'm just calling him an asshole for catching David Wright's last at bat.
Mox.
It's like I was not prepared for this when I woke up in the morning.
Mox, y'all are born wrestling fans. I'm telling you, like, you were made for this. This is so good. Holy shit. That's the funniest goddamn thing I've ever heard. No, oh, wow. That was almost better than this main event. but, I mean, it's not terrible.
Completely derailing us.
Yeah, right. No. It's had to be someone else's turn, Mox. It's always me. That being said, in the ring, the bell goes off and the guys bust out the cookie cutters. They get bacon. This is a very cookie cutter. This is like everything a Lex versus Ric Flair match would be, basically. But that being said, the cookies are good. And the crowd's loving it because like they hate Flair, and I feel like that's part of the craft, is that he went up to the fans to see what the reaction would be, to kind of gauge like, what am I working with here? Oh, they want me dead. So he gets in there and he is selling like Nancy Pelosi after a hot stock tip. Like he is just giving it, screaming. At one point he gets tossed out and throws a tantrum, like literally stomping mad, and walks away for a while, takes a powder, you know, like makes it back in time to the ring, just in time to open up a chop house and tenderizes the shit out of Alexa's chest meats. And it's fun, you know. Eric then lets us know there is no Nitro next week, too. Thus, again, correcting everyone else that has spoken tonight, because it's just that fucking week. And like,
because nobody has any idea what's going on.
No fucking clue. Bobby continues to go off and says, and Eric says he's getting wacky on his last night and asks him what he's going to do. He's like, I'm going to take some time off. I'm going to relax. And I was like, fuck yeah, Bobby, he's retiring. Just stop asking questions. Like, just leave my weasel alone.
Head off to the sunset, man.
Yeah. I mean, he wants to at this point. Like, no kayfabe, Bobby Heenan hated this shit, apparently. Like, he was drunk a lot. Like, he only did it because it meant he could live near his daughter who was going to college. And like, it was good money, you know, and he was like, all right, cool. Sure. Like, I'll take it. And it worked for his family, but he didn't really want to be there. His heart wasn't in it anymore. He's another guy who he was the one of the faces of the Federation for years and years and years. There before Raw, they had Primetime Wrestling and he was one of the hosts, him and Gorilla Monsoon. They still have it, I think, on Peacock. And honestly, it's fantastic to go back and watch Gorilla Monsoon and Bobby Heenan introduce Rick. It's not like this kind of show. It's them sitting in like a news studio kind of setting. And it's just these two guys who love each other riffing back and forth, and then occasionally throwing to footage of a match that happened usually at Madison Square Garden, sometimes at like house shows and stuff. It was before they had Raw. That's how we got wrestling TV, and before Nitro, like that's what it was. So he did that, and like that's why he's so good. And like he talks about his broadcast career and shit. Like he's legit. Like, so that's why I'm sitting here confused, because like I know it doesn't happen, but like at the time I'm like, is this real? Like, is he, in the sense that like, is this leading to a storyline, or is like Bobby drunk and like literally like mutinying right now, and then he'll be back next week with a slap on the wrist? Like, what is going
on? That's what it felt like.
That is kind of what it felt like.
There was no, because you know, if again, this is like one of those pre-planning things. It's like, hey, I'm gonna do a bit. You know, you say it at the top of it, like before the show, to your coach, like, hey, I'm gonna do a bit that I'm retiring, right? And like, we can play with that all night, and then it'll be an April Fool's joke at the very end. And it's just like, oh, good idea, Bobby, let's riff on that all night. Instead, he just seems to just drop it in, and no one but. Yeah. And then he drops it in again, and they're like, wait, this is real? Okay, like,
I guess doing it,
And then the payoff is nothing, because there wasn't enough riffing in order to really build it up or add any suspense or emotion. So it's just a fucking failed bit.
Basically. And I mean, we'll get there, because like that's all the way. Still, speaking of failed bits, to finish this match, in the ring, we got figure four rest hold, a reversal, Rick's being murdered, blah, blah, blah. Now, how is Rick going to win this? Even though, like, it's one of those things like with Hogan, where it's like Luger, it doesn't make sense for Luger to lose to Rick, but also Luger's not getting that fucking belt. So how do we do this? So a woman grabs a cup from a fan/plant. Liz distracts the ref and she throws it in Lex's face, so Rick gets the win. And it's great because like the commentary, Bobby is like, oh my God, steaming. It's steaming hot coffee. Everyone's
steaming hot.
It's steaming hot coffee. When she throws it,
you can see the steam. You can see the steam.
Yeah, but yeah, except for when she throws it and you can see the ice that like it bounces off of his face. And I was like, just mwah. Like the boys of the booth are going at it. And like, here we go. Bobby, it's the end of Bobby's career. He's saying goodbye until next time, I'm sure. Bobby shakes Mago and Eric's hands. They get quiet. And then he says, oh, by the way, April Fools. And honest to fucking God, though, Mox, that it was April 1st, he got me. Like I was so confused the whole time. So it's a failed bit, but not really. He got me. Yeah. Like, I totally was like, oh my God, I fucking forgot. And
I had completely forgotten that it was April 1st, even though, like, it's at the top of the window, right? Because it just says April 1st, 1996. The entire time we're watching it, completely forgot that it was April 1st. And they had made some, like, comments to April Fools earlier. But, like, the wires had not connected that this was, could be a bit. Like, it just, he got me. At the same time, like, what are we doing?
Because
the same year as the Taco Liberty Bell?
I don't know.
Like, right about then.
But also, it's Bobby. Like, when it happened, I was like, oh my God, that's a Bobby Heenan bit. It didn't go over well as it could, I think, because Eric and Mongo sucked at playing into it. And that's right. If Bobby had done that same bit to Gorilla Monsoon, it would have been comedy gold.
Yeah, I mean, if Bobby had done that same bit with a 30-second pre-show, like 15 seconds of pre-show, just like, hey, I'm going to pretend to retire tonight. Like, oh, okay, that sounds fun. All right.
Yeah, let him in.
And then once again, to the middle of a fucking fight. Only edit I make as the director of this thing is to, hey, just mention your bit to your co-host.
For the love of God, so that it sounds like it makes sense. No, so yeah, it was a not awful Nitro. It was fun. It had good bits, but overall, it was a fucking mess. It really was. But it has one of my favorite Bobby Heenan lines of all time. Like, I told Kiddo that those are the two ugliest Rockettes I've ever seen. Is gonna stay with me for weeks. I'm gonna be giggling about that. But yeah, so like that, it was all right. And now we get to Raw.
I mean, it was a fun episode. Like, had a lot of fun with it. Like, you know, it was slapdash.
Yeah.
It was very slapdash. Lots of edits that, like, a lot of, like, things that just, like, oh, you could have tightened that up really easily. But at the same time, you know, it's just an entertaining hour of TV.
It really was. It was fast-paced. I'm not
bored. Right.
Yeah, and like the fact that it was fucked up, I think, led to having this kind of frantic pace that actually made for a pretty good time for a while there.
Yeah.
It slowed down somewhere around the Nasty Boys angle. But other than that, it was pretty great. Like, it was definitely a clusterfuck, but I can like me a clusterfuck.
You're tuned in to Ghost Coast Studios, the world's first and only podcast network. Built for creators, activists, and entrepreneurs with something to say. Gripping audio documentaries. Conversations that spark change. We're here to bring your ideas to life. Ready for more? Head to ghostcoast.video for shows that matter. Tools to help you create. And a community that's totally redefining what a podcast network can be. Ghost Coast Studios. Meet your dreams.
That's
most of what shit posting is, right? I mean, it's just like, let's see what sticks.
No, that was a whole bunch of them. Like, this plan didn't work. Let's see what sticks. And some of it was pretty good. And the crowd really helped. Like, the crowd being that active made for a really entertaining episode. But again, I say now to Raw, and I didn't mean to bring you on for like a historic Raw. I've said this so many times to guests, but we're getting into the era where, like, this shit just keeps happening, and it's historic to me at least. But
yeah,
it's the night after WrestleMania. I do kind of giggle because as I was looking this up, I found out that Ultimate Warrior was in a dark match, like, against Goldust and won by countout, and I'm just like, he was in on WrestleMania the night before, and it's just like, what are you doing? Well, you have him in the dark match. It's Ultimate Warrior, like, in a dark, I don't know. It doesn't make sense to me. Maybe I just don't know wrestling. I am just a fan. But, like, I was like, I feel like Ultimate Warrior is not going to be here for very long. So I had to mention that. Ugh. But new intro animation. The Great Cube is gone. Now we have a tornado of text. And unfortunately, it's still Vince doing the weird opening and a blaring siren and Jerry Lawler but most importantly, what's historic about it for me and everyone, Mankind's here. It's Mankind time.
Yeah.
Mama Foley's baby.
That completely threw us when we were watching, because, like, I mean, obviously, again, you know, growing up when we did, you know, you've got, you know, Mankind, and as an adult, like, you know, Mick Foley, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, so it's like, oh, cool, it's Mankind. But then they're talking about Mankind as though they've never seen Mankind. And at which point, like, our notes is like, wait, comma, is this his first episode? Question, exclamation part. Oh my God.
Yep, you got it. You won the lottery. You got the first WWF Foley, the first Raw Foley.
It was fantastic. And he just, like a young Brando, just
yeah, adult. Yeah, he really, everything about it is... And I just kept, like, putting in my notes here that, like, this is stuff that I feel like these fans have not seen anything like this. Like,
I don't know if anyone had, like, no one, nothing prepares you for that.
No, not really.
Growing up watching YouTube doesn't prepare you for, like, just, okay, so now you got this big guy in a fucking mask, and he's ripping his own hair out in clumps.
Walking like, out to orchestral, like, haunting orchestral string music, like...
What the fuck is going on? Big guys hit each other. Like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah, and I mean, the big guy, they feed him. They're feeding him spark plug. Fuck you, Bob Holly. And like, Bob Holly has become, for a while there, they're trying to push him, but he has firmly switched places at this point. He is the one being fed. Within seconds, yeah,
not like, sure which ended up being bigger, the bald spot that happened from Mick pulling out his hair, or bald spot in the back of Sparkplug's head. But they're in competition.
Yeah. But I was going to say, he eventually ends up fully bald, so I think he wins there. but it, within seconds, Mick is doing the squeal noises as he mauls him, and he's ripping his own hair out and showing the camera.
It's fantastic.
And throwing his body at him. And like, holy fuck. And
no one gets hurt. Like Mick Foley.
No, like, and he's doing it too. He has to for the sake of the fucking game. He loves it too much.
He so clearly loves it. And again, like, we don't know shit about wrestling. Like, we're, you know, it's just cultural osmosis, you know. Know the big things and whatnot. And, you know who Mankind is, and know by the end of this, and I'm, you know, we'll get to it, but, like, you know, through cultural osmosis, we know some things, and we know that, like, Mick Foley can get hit with a goddamn semi-truck and just
keep going.
Like, he can lose an arm and just keep going. He so clearly loves his job.
He loves, and I've listened to a lot of Mick talking about this shit, and I've read his books. He has this thing he calls the Foley risk-reward ratio, like that he has to think of. Because he'll get an idea. He'll, like, get an image in his head, and he's like, oh, I bet you I could do that. Is it going to be worth it? Oh, I bet you. You're like, oh, that's going to hurt, but is it going to be worth it? And, like, and that's his, like, one of my favorite stories he ever told was when he was still in WCW, is Cactus Jack. And ECW fans are absolutely there because they're during this match, they're going, he's hardcore. He's hardcore. And I was like, oh, they know that's Cactus Jack. And then I think about it, it's the night after WrestleMania, and there was definitely a bunch of ECW fans at WrestleMania that we, like, picked out of the crowd. And I was like, oh, fantastic. So that makes sense. So, like, people know this shit, but one of my favorite things is he's told was a story where he was working at WCW, and Goldust's dad, Dusty Rhodes, the American Dream, he's the booker, and he's working out this thing where they're doing a thing where he's... I think it was him and Vader, and there's a table involved, and it's like, do something with the table, and Mick is like, you know, or it wasn't, I don't know if it was a table or like a stack of like wooden pallets or something, but he's like, you know, I bet you I could go head first through that and not crack my head on the cement underneath and have it look really good. And it would be really risky, but I could see it, and I really want to do it. And he goes to Dusty, and he's like, I really want it. And he goes to Dusty, and he's like, hey, you know, I had this idea, I want to do this like this. What do you think about that? And, like, theoretically, it's Dusty's job to, as the boss and the booker, you would think to be like, no, for the love of fuck, don't do that. you're going to die on television. But Dusty, being a wrestler and being Dusty, is like, you know, I don't think you can do it, but I'd sure like to see you try. And he was like, all right, and he did it. But absolutely slammed his head into the cement and rung his bell, got a concussion probably. So, like, yeah.
Amount of concussions that man has had, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, who he literally don't even, there's no way of knowing. But it's that kind of match. He spends most of this match just throwing his body at Bob. All kinds of good shit. He eventually gets him in the mandible claw. And I don't know.
You gotta love good gagging fetish for a submission. Like, that's fantastic.
Speaking of, I almost just did a spit take. Oh my fucking God. Gagging fetish. Do you know the fun fact about the mandible claw?
Probably not.
Oh, I love when I get to give fun facts. So it was invented by a wrestler who was a former doctor. I think he might have been a dentist. I can't remember. You think I would know this better. That knew about the pressure points in the jawline. So basically, the idea is it's not like gagging so much as he's putting his fingers like under your tongue and and then the thumb up into it. And that's an actual like pressure point where if you do that, you paralyze someone from like the jaw down. And like, sure. and you can make them pass out. Like, it's an actual thing. So he knew that because he was a doctor. So he made that his finishing move doing this. That same doctor was the inspiration for the film The Fugitive with Harrison Ford.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Also, fun fact, the real-life guy from The Fugitive probably totally killed his wife.
Did he kill his wife?
He served time for it. There was no... There was no one-armed man, dude.
Us that he didn't.
There was no one-armed man. That guy did time and then became a wrestler after the fact. And I believe he used the ring name Killer or something like that. And it's like, dude, you went to jail. And like, God, this is such a fucked up carny sport. I love it. But yeah, we get a little look at WrestleMania where Mark Mero and Triple Paul begin to slow roast a beef. And they cut to Sable at ringside saying that she bought a seat, and they're building this feud around who gets to win Sable, basically, which is gross as fuck. But in the funny twist... Yeah, right.
So problematic.
Nah. In the funny twist, she ends up becoming, like, more over than both of them for the most part, which I'm sure made her life worse. She ended up suing the company for sexual harassment, but then came back after the fact, and is now married to Brock Lesnar, who was named in the lawsuit against Vince and the company for sex trafficking. So, yeah, welcome to Wrestling Mox. It kind of sucks here. they keep playing us a promo ad for the WrestleMania replay to try to get a second crack at the pay-per-view numbers, and they do it like twice, and it makes me very angry, and it makes me think that WrestleMania didn't sell well this year.
Yeah, they did. They did push it twice. They did the same pan through of like a crowd, you know, cheering at WrestleMania, like people in the lobby cheering, and the same pan through of a couple of kids in red lensed glasses, which are problematic if you're part of the Blue Sky community.
It really is.
You can't wear those anymore. So that's a problem.
It's really unfortunate for like everyone involved. People stop ruining eyewear,
it's a national problem.
Yeah,
there are only so many great forms of eyewear.
Yeah, stop ruining Sable's life. I feel like she's been through enough. But yeah, much to my surprise, Mayor Kane here, the dentist Isaac Yankum is still here. I can't believe I really thought we were done seeing this fucking character. But it's clear that he's going to be fed to Mark Mero. This guy used to be called... He used to wrestle in WCW up until like a couple weeks before this. As a guy named Johnny B. Bad, who was basically doing a Little Richard impression and kind of wearing blackface, but not sort of... Not really, but not really. And I don't know. So now he's... Over here, they're like, okay, it's fine. You can just be Italian. And, you know, so, like, now he's just Mark Mero. So this is cool. Two in-ring debuts for former WCW talent between him and Foley. And the crowd's really liking it. He's doing a lot of his Johnny B. Badd stuff. And, like, I liked him a lot when I was a kid because he did, like, this mixture of cruiserweight, heavyweight style kind of stuff. And it was really cool. And I'm into it. But, you know, we're seeing some really good matching, some really good wrestling in this match. So, of course, they bring Triple Paul out to come distract us and sit, you know, by Sable in a split screen. And it's still Raw. And they keep doing this. Because, like, this match fucks pretty hard, despite the wrestling dentist of it all. But they're like, no, don't pay attention to that. We're going to do this instead. And whatever.
How long had Triple H been around at that point?
Oh, geez. Triple H had been around maybe a little bit before Raw, before the start of our show. Like, he has not been around long. He's been around maybe less than 6 months at this point.
Have they started, you know, like, this is one of those things from, like, cultural osmosis. Yes. Like, they're using his full name and stuff. They're using all three H's.
He's still what they call the blue blood Hunter Hearst Helmsley. And he's like
this Hunter Hearst Helmsley. It's a good character. Like, it's a good, I totally dig it. But, like, it's like, you know, it's proto, and it's like, definitely enjoy seeing, like, these, like, blasts back, because, I mean, he's still around, right?
He played the long game. He is now basically in charge of creative. He's the booker at WWE. He's the because Vince wants everyone to think that they're legitimate business. He is now called the chief content officer, aka the fucking booker man. like this is a carny business. We've been doing this for like 120 years at this point. Just call him the fucking booker, Vince. Fuck. But yeah, like, Vince got kicked out for being a sex criminal, and he took over.
As you do.
Hopefully it fucking sticks this time. Probably not, because I don't know. Trump is busy systemically destroying the global economy for as long as they let him get away with it. So, like, he hasn't gotten around to pardoning Vince yet, I think, which is...
Yeah, we haven't looked at our phone since we started recording. I mean, are we sure we have a government right now?
Oh, God. Or maybe we get done and he's pardoned Vince, and I'm just like, God damn it.
I mean, it would be a great end to the pod.
God
damn it. Vince is back, baby.
Oh, fuck. Don't you put us on that. Put that on us. But speaking of great ends, I ask myself, what's Mark using as a finisher? Because, like, he's had a lot of them. And he's going with this huge, like, sunset flip off the top rope, which is pretty cool. And that's good for three. And then Trips gets handsy, and Sable slaps the Nazi out of him and leaves with her husband. I'm like, yay. Yep. This is good.
it is a weird romance subplot. Had trouble following exactly who was what the backstory was dropping in the middle.
Not the middle. This is just
starting. Was it just starting?
Yeah, like, he showed up for the first time the night before at WrestleMania. Him and Sable.
Oh, okay.
So that showing them like fighting each other, that happened the night before. So, like, they're really trying to get this off the ground. But, like, so it, you know, it's confusing because it's wrestling and it's confusing. It doesn't make sense, but it makes sense to Vince because it's like, yeah, you fight over women, their property, you know? So
fight, like, over women. I mean, cause that brings to, again, going back to our wonderful, random scribbled notes. Yeah. One of them is, what the fuck is a slammy? Never mind. Figured it out.
Yeah. It's something that exists for Lawler to talk about Sonny's ass. That's why.
Yes. It exists for Jerry Lawler to talk about her ass. And I mean, it's funny. It's like seeing Jerry Lawler. Okay, so the kind of nerd that we were, like, we knew more about Jerry Lawler than wrestling. And that's because we love Andy Kaufman.
Help.
Like, as a kid. Right.
Oh, God. So I just again almost spit take. Hell yes. Fuck, like, yeah.
Yeah. So that's the kind of nerd that we are, right? That's the kind of nerd that was this kid. So it's just like, watching this episode, it's just like, okay, what's going on? And it's just like, yeah, it's Jerry Lawler. It's like, oh, Andy Kaufman's buddy. Like, that's like the first association. It's not Jerry Lawler the wrestler. It's Jerry Lawler the person that Andy Kaufman was in a long-term wrestling-based bit with. You know,
basically, Andy Kaufman died with Lawler not really knowing if he actually hated him or not.
If it was a bit, yeah.
Yeah, because that's kayfabe. Yeah, and I mean, that's kayfabe. That's not even good comedy. That's good wrestling. That's what's the best part.
It's incredible.
That's what's so great about Andy Kaufman's whole shtick is that he wasn't even really doing comedy. He was doing professional wrestling. But it was comedic because he looked like him. But all he was doing is what Lawler does. Like, literally the same. And that's what made it genius. And I am also in y'all's same camp. Before I was a fan of professional wrestling at, like, 8 years old, I was a fan of Taxi on Nick at Night.
Sure.
So I was a fan of Andy Kaufman and knew about Lawler because of Kaufman before being like, oh, my God, it's that fuck. So, like, same boat. Absolutely. Oh, it's so cool. I met another one. Yay. So, like, Lawler's talking about Sunny's ass because she's brought out the Body Donnas, who are, I guess, tag team champions. I don't remember when that happened. That shows how much I care about the tag team. Like, I've mentioned it before, the division is not great. There's pig farmers. There's exercise guys. There's,
Like, only note from that tag team is just, they did nothing for me. The whole, like, didn't dig the bit, like, it just felt real weak.
Yeah, it's not great, which is unfortunate because Chris Candido is an amazing.
It was a good first match.
Yeah.
Or a good first count, but it's just like, you get to this tag team and it didn't seem to vibe.
And it's because they don't have a tag team division, and like the Body Donnas got thrown together. Sure. Aldo Montoya and Barry Horowitz are just two jobbers that they threw together to be the jobber tag team. They're two of the best to ever do it. Barry fucking Horowitz is my favorite jobber of all time, jobber to the stars. I love him, but it is what it is. But we're in this era where, like, they don't really know what to do with the tag team division, and they're trying this. And it sucks because, like, Chris Candido fucking rules. And there's not a lot of energy for this match, probably because it's weird. But then Chris Candido gets tagged in, and the crowd goes nuts. And I remember there were ECW fans at WrestleMania because Chris Candido used to work ECW. So, like, they went nuts for their favorite boy to come in, even though they're calling him, what, Skip, I think? Or something like that.
Yeah, some weird names.
Yeah, but it's Chris fucking Candido. So, like, I'm just like, oh my God, that's right. They were at WrestleMania and they stuck around for the Raw after Mania. Like, they're following the company. And, like, oh, to be a dirtbag wrestling fan in the 90s, to, like, be from Philly in New York in that area and be a person that goes to ECW every week, go to LA for WrestleMania, and then end up in, like, what, wherever they were, probably maybe, like, somewhere still in California the next day.
San Diego?
Yeah, probably. I imagine they didn't go far. And I'm just like, oh my God, that sounds like the life. But Candido takes a suplex to the outside that looked painful. And my summation for this match is that wrestling fans love Chris Candido, Sandy's butt, or Sonny's butt, and Barry fucking Horowitz. And I agree. like, these are three good things. And then, like, to prove it, Candido hits the top rope Hurricane Rana, where he whips the guy onto his fucking dome with his legs, and then Pritchard, like, falls on him with his butt, and it's like, all right, that's a fun tag team finisher, let's go. It is what it is. It was nothing amazing, but, like, Chris Candido killed it. It was just like, here's a match where Aldo Montoya is pretty good, Barry Horowitz is amazing and solid. Chris Candido does shit that no one is ready to see, and I guess Tom Pritchard is here. And, like, that was this match. Yeah.
All right.
What's that?
I said, that's a good sum up.
Yeah, that's about it. They come back, and Doc Hendricks tells us the superstar line will tell us exactly what Bret Hart did after the match at WrestleMania in his locker room. And I just wrote, I imagine a shower. I took a big shit. I don't know. What are you talking about? It's getting weird. It's getting weird already. Like
1-900 numbers.
Yeah. Oh yeah. They have the superstar line.
That is an incantation from a dark art that had just been completely erased from the tomes in our mind of 1-900 numbers. $1.49 a minute.
To hear what the fuck?
$1.49 a minute. Oh my god. That is so much money.
To hear call. Either JR or if you do the WCW version, Mean Gene, make shit up, basically.
Good stuff. Incredible.
Great.
Love it.
Yeah, no, I'm here for it. Speaking of deep, deep love, Vince gets downright guttural introducing the face of the new WWF generation and my boy toy, Shawn Michaels. Shawn continues his practice of kissing random girls in the audience, damn it, and I'm made uncomfortable. At least, look, this week it was an adult, so that's great at least. And Mox, I wish I were kidding.
Yeah, I'm bad at it.
It's god damn it, Shawn. I used to like him when I was a kid, and how could you not? I love the Power Rangers, and Shawn looks like the white Power Ranger in this.
He looks like a white Power Ranger. The outfit is so much.
It's so much.
The only thought that comes to mind is like, what if like Siegfried and Roy were in season 2 of Yu-Gi-Oh?
Yeah. Like, I want to hit
and leather and stretch. Why is this happening? I want it to always happen. I would love that to just be formal wear. Yeah. I would like that to be state dinners.
Yes, no, that should that should be the new politician chic. We're going full empire.
If you can't pull off this outfit, how are you supposed to represent us to the world?
Yeah, exactly. And how are you supposed to be some sort of a fascist regime if you don't have this kind of outfit? Like he looks like a fucking stormtrooper. That's what you're going for, right? You fucks. But it's
incredible.
Like covered in like mirrors and stuff though, and I'm just sitting here thinking like,
yeah, just mirrors and straps and chrome and buckles and straps and chrome and buckles. It's more
fuck that it's the 90s and there was no laser pointers yet, is my thought. Like, someone in the crowd could just blinded 10,000 people.
The other thing that kept standing out about like the lead up to Michaels's, you know, introduction and whatnot was the screenshot that they'd show to like for the promo of like, you know, Michaels is going to come out soon. It was this, you know, it's just this shot of him, but it looks like VHS quality. And that's not to say like the recording is in low quality. It's like the promo image of him is so low quality. It's so great. It looks like a freeze frame from a VHS that they're just like quickly erasing and being like, put that on the promo, like put that on the Chiron.
That's probably what it was. Like,
I'm sure it's what it was, but it's just like, how do you not have a promo image of your world champion? Like, just a promo image, just a photograph, like something with any amount of DPI. I'll take three. Three DPI.
I'm sitting here going, like, wanting to give them the benefit of the doubt, like, well, it just happened last night. But it's fake. They knew it was going to happen. They could have prepared.
It
like,
happen.
Why and it would take fire?
No time whatsoever to just like, hey, stand here. Let me take a picture using this camera technology that we've had for 150 years.
Oh my god! It's Raw is not a clusterfuck like Nitro was, but it's a clusterfuck full of bad decisions made, and yeah, like it's a different kind of clusterfuck.
It's great. So Michaels comes out in that
and that
beautiful God mode outfit.
And proceeds to he's pleased with himself in that hat and that
beautiful hat.
The hat that's like a Super Bowl championship hat, but for himself.
No, that's giving it way too much credit. That's not a Super Bowl championship hat. That is I went to the mall and paid like that $5 where they'll embroider it for me hat. It doesn't even look like WWF provided it for him. It looks like he made it.
That's the high school football team is going to state hat. Like, exactly. Yeah, that they, oh exactly. My fucking
it's just God. Like, Vince, I made this hat. Can I wear it on the cameras, please? Like, that's what it felt like.
Oh, and that's the level of fucks they were giving at this point. And this whole segment goes on way too long. It's just them being pleased with themselves because they got the belt off of Brett. Like, and that's
they're legit. Very happy. They both hate they're having Brett a Hart. Lot of fun with it.
Yeah, they hate Bret Hart. They love themselves and each other. And like Vince is so happy that his guy is here. And I hate it.
You can probably answer a question that kept coming up, especially during like the episode of Raw where you're just needing to deal with Vince's voice constantly. Where did the wrestler voice come from? Like, is there someone that was like the genesis point for the talking down here and like this?
Well, I mean, that's a good, it depends. Well, if you're talking about the wrestler voice, if you're talking about specifically Vince's voice, because those have two similar but diverging. I mean,
Vince is definitely a different level. Absolutely. Like, Vince but it's just like,
special. Yeah.
How much gravel, like, he turns it into a caricature. It's all gravel, no voice.
He hasn't even gotten to the caricature part. It gets worse as the, because he literally turns that into a caricature character that he like wrestles as. And it's,
is that Michael Keaton movie? Multiplicity, where he's making a copy of a copy.
Oh God! And no, that's it. He's a copy of a copy of a copy of a mixture of wrestlers and commentators that he liked and respected. A lot of it is the Grahams. The Grahams were a dynastic family of wrestlers out of Florida. And you have, I'm not sure if y'all have heard the name Superstar Billy Graham. He was a WWF champion back before there was one less W and Vince's dad was still alive. And he is basically what Hulk Hogan ripped off to become Hulk Hogan. Also Jesse Ventura. All three of those guys operated around the same time, Hulk a little later. And like Jesse and Superstar were just ripping each other off, but they weren't necessarily in the same fed. This is a thing that the further back you go, the further away from more global information connection, the more this kind of thing happens. There's a lot of instances of it. Like you have, so funny because like Lord Humongous from Mad Max 2 is the character from Mad Max 2, Lord Humongous. Mm-hmm. But Lord Humongous would take their tallest boy and put him in a BDSM outfit like Lord Humongous and just call him Lord Humongous. Like a lot of different wrestlers who ended up like I'm pretty sure Sid Vicious, rest in peace, was Lord Humongous at some point. Like a lot of guys like worked this gimmick in different territories. And it's just like especially the further back you go, you could get away with that. Like there was wrestling Ninja Turtles in indie territories and even like slightly more than indie territories because like, well, I shouldn't say indie territories because this is back when that was just what it was. It was just territories. Like everything was an indie promotion for a segment of the country. So like you could get away with that. So like there to answer your question, I don't know if I can because it goes back. It's someone doing a pastiche of someone else doing a pastiche of someone else doing a pat. You know what I mean? And it probably goes back to someone that was early days of television, if not beforehand. Because you had these guys who like the old school, like we're watching where everyone looks kind of like a bodybuilder. But the old school wrestlers would just look like a guy who worked at the dock, you know, and it was more about like real people getting in a ring and fighting sort of thing, kind of what MMA sort of is now. But that idea,
big dude who can lift.
Yeah, you're versus, going. Yeah,
as they refer to one in Always Sunny, like glamour muscles, right?
Yeah,
I mean, it's just
exactly. Which Lex is all glamour muscles.
But, all glamour muscles.
So you just get these guys who were gravelly and sounded like they smoked, you know, 10 cigars a day because they did, you know, and like they really, like a lot of times they really just were those people. And
yeah, you know, I'd love to hear their day-to-day voice, right? Like, because famously, like in terms of like wild voices that yeah. people know, like famously Gilbert Gottfried.
Yeah.
God rest his soul.
Another RIP.
Yeah. That was not his normal voice, right?
No,
everyone knows him as the character, right? Everyone knows that voice, but that was just not, that was as much him as Teller from Penn & Teller not actually being mute, you know, like he had a normal voice. I want to know what what Shawn Michaels is just like everyday voice is.
It's
like
bad.
Just hang out and talk like, hey, Sean, so tell me about your day. Here's that voice. I just want to hear his normal fucking voice.
Here's the thing,
like,
though,
the prop register, and this is what I did today.
But the problem is that, like, he is of this era that we're watching where we're gotten to the point where a lot of these guys are, and him especially, for his own personal character flaws, are smelling their own farts, you know what I mean?
Mm.
So, like, and they're starting to blend the line between, they're starting to break kayfabe and blend the line between the real and the not real, and using that to your advantage to write stories that seem like they could be real because you're writing it as though it is, like, oh, they're breaking kayfabe, but like it's double kayfabe, you know what I mean? It's right. Like the doubling the layer. Josie Reisman calls it neo kayfabe. Is it's this new understanding of the idea of kayfabe is now part of the kayfabe itself, and we can do something.
Right.
It's a inception. You're going another level deeper.
Yeah, it becomes an Ouroboros.
And that's where we are now in modern wrestling. Is it's this Ouroboros of weirdness and people? I could go into it. that's I've folks, you've heard that rant. I'm not gonna do it again. So yeah. But yeah, it's that kind of thing, and it's very interesting that we've gotten to this, the this of it all. Oh god, I totally lost. I think we managed to fully tangent to the point where I lost what the fuck I was.
We were talking about Shawn Michaels' interview.
Oh god, that's all right. Yeah, we're talking about Shawn's interview. Yeah, we our tangent went as long as the interview.
Basically, yeah,
that's all you need to know.
I am fine. Like this is a lot of fun.
But yes, good. I'm happy. You are. We're not even done with the episode. We're almost there. But you're welcome back. But yes, they Sean wraps this whole thing up by saying that him and Diesel make good friends but better enemies. They're setting up him versus Diesel, and actually the next In Your House is called In Your House: Good Friends, Better Enemies. And he says that he's going to eat some chin music and get his face danced on. Needless to say, patrons, come around for the next In Your House. but this also kind of, this is the last arc for Diesel, because Diesel is going to be leaving very soon after this and starting the NWO in WCW. We're getting there, folks.
Gotcha.
We are very close to when all of this.
One of the notes was like, yeah. So during this whole interview, right? You've got. They're talking up, you know, everything that happened yesterday, the stuff that's coming in the future. And the thing that, like, kept laughing about was you've got, like, Lawler on the mic at ringside talking shit, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
But he's talking shit at Michaels.
Yeah, yeah.
But, like, the note that we wrote down was, do you know he can't hear you?
No, I don't think he does.
And shit, I'm expecting like some call and response, but he's not getting any because Michaels is standing in the middle of a ring with, you know, 20,000 people all screaming, and he's got his own whatever going on. And Lawler's sitting here talking into a microphone so he can hear himself on his monitor.
And he can hear him.
He's sitting here just laughing because he sounds like he's doing a mystery science that, like,
yeah.
It sounds like just adding commentary. To nothing.
He's riff tracking. Yeah, he's riff tracking a fucking interview. It's so bad.
Like, there could be some fun back and forth there.
Yeah,
but Michael doesn't have earpiece or anything, so he has no idea what's going on.
But they're trying to do it for him because they're setting up that for some reason he gets a title shot next week, and I'm already just like, I don't want to. Really? Okay. So that leaves, and back from commercial, Doc Hendricks sounds like he's actually literally phoning in, but he's phoning in a Raw QVC to tell us they're selling Shawn Michaels Championship Matt plaques sewing a piece of the mat from WrestleMania, and I begrudgingly have to admit that's cool as fuck, and I want one. Like, well, I was like, actually, that's really pretty cool. That's pretty fucking that's pretty rad. Fucking
yeah, like, number? Hell yeah.
Yeah, right. That's actually pretty sweet. if anyone wants to go on eBay and find me that's cool. But then we get a brief look at Hawk Bradshaw. They call him Justin Hawk Bradshaw. I'm just going to call him JBL because that's what he goes by now. And it's what I think of him as, or Jibble. but like, I fucking hate him. He's not a good dude. Piece of shit. Not the greatest wrestler. But before that, I didn't mention it before. For the second time, Ed Begley Jr.
Loved, Ed Begley Jr.
Loved character actor. Loved character actor Ed Begley Jr.
Like, is that Ed? So that was one of our many notes.
Yeah.
Recurring thing?
No,
in Raw, or is that just for my episode?
No, that from what I could put together, because I too was like, "Hey, awesome! What the fuck are you doing here, my guy? Like, so what are you doing here?"
Why is Ed Begley Jr. on his bicycle?
Yeah, and then, but apparently it was
the first time. And it's like, wait, was that Ed Begley Jr.? I'm watching a 15-year-old episode, 20-year-old episode of WWF, so I'm not gonna pause and rewind.
Yeah, like wait a minute. That couldn't actually be.
Just like it crossed my mind. I was like, wait, was that Ed Begley Jr.? Was that? Yeah, there's no way. Let's keep watching this episode.
Yeah.
Wait, that's Ed Begley Jr. What the fuck are you
doing here? But I think he was just, this was just for you because it's April Fool's Day and we love Mox. And I think he was
some
there.
Bit about being like a local TV reporter.
He's promoting an April Fool's special for some sort of show that he must have been involved with that I have no fucking idea about. I have no idea. Really confusing. No, like, it's what fantastic. The fuck? I'm always happy to see him. I mean, that's fine. Like, you can show up in my wrestling more, Ed Begley. That's fine. But then it's Stan Lee, right? The match itself, though, it's our main event for Raw. Stan Lariat Light.
Before we get to it,
other
thing that I thought, the Milton Bradley Karate Fighters ad.
Oh, we'll get there. Yes, okay. I was going to bring this up.
I just want to make sure that those get touched on. Oh,
yeah. It was Slam of the Week.
Everything is amazing.
Yeah, everything about it's so good. So, yes, it's JBL versus Undertaker, blah, blah, blah. It's one of those matches where I hate both combatants as a human, and I just hope they both get hurt. That'd be great. I am kind of jealous of Bradshaw's ponytail, though. But then, more importantly, Milton Bradley's Karate Fighter Slam of the Week.
Milton Bradley's Karate Fighters.
Yeah. Oh, I wanted him like, so bad.
I mean, because they were like a kind of an MMA Rock'em Sock'em Robots.
Yeah,
right.
It was Rock'em Sock'em Robots, but
they
only
could kick.
Yeah, because it was actually a really cool mechanic in my mind. Because like one of the where all right, so I don't know how young of listeners listen. If you're under 18, you shouldn't be here. if you're under 27, I'm giving you side eye. So like if you understand this, the Rock'em Sock'em Robot. You got these two robots in a boxing ring, and they're both of their legs are stuck in place, and it's just you hit buttons that make a real easy mechanical thing where the fist goes out and punches, and if you manage to hit the opponent robot on the chin just right, it knocks it off the spring and it bounces up and you win, right? So the karate fighter, only one leg is attached and the other one gesticulates wildly on a on a joint, so it's not kicking so much as flailing.
Fantastic.
I gotta
know how much they are on eBay.
Oh god, but oh, I'm sitting here thinking like fuck COVID, because I bet you I could go to like Savers, and if I went to enough Savers I would find Karate Kids. I know this, I've been to enough of them. But the actual slam of the week is Goldust at WrestleMania driving a gold Cadillac into known human shit stain Roddy Piper. And to this I say, good for her. like, good on you. That deserves slam of the week.
It's a gold Cadillac. It's giving it a lot of, you're really giving a lot of credit. It was not very much gold so much as it was like rattle can brass.
Yes, I actually know for a fact they went to, so it's kind of a funny story. The whole bet, we talked a bit about it on our WrestleMania patreon.com/MNF MNFF pod. If you want to hear us talk about it more. But there's a lot that goes into this match, which ended up just being a hate crime. But part of it, it was several hate crimes, because part of it was the fact that they were going to do a car chase because they wanted to do a O.J. Simpson joke. And so in order to do that, they had to go get two cars. So, like, they went and got Roddy Piper a brand new white Bronco. So of that course. Was, like, perfect for the bit. Brand spanking new, and they went and got whatever sedan, like luxury looking, like Buick Cadillac knockoff motherfucker they could get, and then spray painted it gold. And Dusty's like, I got the shit end of this. Like, damn it, I could have got a brand new Bronco, and instead I got this gold spray painted Cadillac like POS.
Like, you know, I used to do some spray when I was young. Like, that is the lowest tier rattle can you can find.
Well, you think they're going to spend money on this, Max? Yeah. Like, come on now. No. Vince has crimes to commit. Come on.
It's mostly brown.
Yeah, right. Oh, my God. Jesus. So, that was fantastic, which not so much. This match is just mostly forgettable. It's Bradshaw doing power moves and Taker no selling, so like whatever. It goes, pretty much ends with Taker doing a choke slam and the tombstone, which the crowd loves. You know, that's what they came for. They came to see Undertaker do his two moves, and he's about to end Bradshaw's undefeated streak. But what's this, Mox? Mankind attacks Undertaker out of nowhere, ending the match in a DQ, and beginning one of the feuds of my childhood, and one of the best feuds of the entire era.
Right. That's the last note we made, which was, is this what sets up Hell in a Cell? OMG,
yes!
OMG.
Yes! Like, 2 years later, and it sets up my mean, like, never really making normal friends ever again in school, because I had a birthday party where I invited everyone over to watch that. that went super well. Because I fucking love Mankind versus Taker. It's so good, it's legendary.
Like, watch this episode, and like, because like, slowly was realizing, you know, at the beginning, we're like, wait, they're talking about Mankind like they've never seen Mankind before. Like,
yep,
holy shit, are we like watching like the debut of Mankind? And then slowly that becomes apparent that like, holy shit, we're watching the debut of Mankind.
But then,
you know, the rest of the episode goes along. And then you've got Undertaker, and Undertaker's doing his thing. And again, one of those cultural osmosis, and you know, mentioned like, had seen Undertaker do like necromancy, and been like, all right, wrestling seriously.
Nor should you.
And then you've got Undertaker's match, you've got like Paul Bearer like walking around with his magic urn, like looking concerned the whole time.
Fucking Mike Lindell looking motherfucker just making noises.
It's it's great. Here for the ride, like whatever. And then like out of nowhere, here comes Mankind. I'm like, oh my god, not only is this Mankind's first episode, but like, this is it. Like, this is the start of the thing. This isn't just like a thing that has happened. This is the thing.
And I've said it before on the show when talking about Undertaker, that Undertaker's 6 years basically into his career and as this gimmick, at least at this point. And like, it's the crowd loves him, but like, it's stale. And you can kind of tell that it's stale. And like, that's how I've been feeling watching these episodes, is like, all right, it's kind of stale. And I remember like, what, like, how was it that Undertaker managed to turn this stale character into a 30-year career at that one spot as this character? And it's Mankind. It's Mick Foley. Without what we just witnessed the start of, Taker wouldn't have had the career that he had. And is
yep, that makes sense. I mean, because you know, not only are we watching this thing and thinking like, oh, this is Mankind's first episode, but then realizing like in real time, like not only is this setting up Hell in a Cell, which of course is, you don't need to know wrestling to know
that.
Like one of the most famous copypastas, or not copypastas, but like memes on Reddit, is a dude just walking you down the line from nonsense into talking about Hell in a Cell. If you know Shittenworth, really?
I did not know that. That's amazing. That's amazing.
Oh no, there's a Reddit user whose entire bit, and it is incredible, and one of the greatest people in the history of the internet. Like seriously,
oh my god,
like, we do bits all day and cannot come up with one better than this, which is he will reply in what seems like very sincere paragraph text to a post, and it'll start very sincere, and it's like, you know, it's a picture of like a manatee doing whatever, and the reply will start with just like, you know, this is interesting because that's actually an Eastern blah 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 manatee, and he, you know, and when you see them behave in this sort of way, blah 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 blah, blah, and then like, and that will remind you of 1998 when Undertaker threw Mankind plummeted 30 feet in through the announcer's table, or however he phrases it. It's always the same punchline.
Oh my god, that's the greatest thing I've ever heard.
Always, oh my god, it's amazing. Every comment is always, you got me again. You got me again, you son of a bitch. Because it looks and sounds so professional. So unless you are looking for his username, you're just like checking to the bottom, you're like roped in. You're leaning in like, okay, this is interesting information about this thing of whatever the fuck this person is talking. And now he's talking about Mankind.
Much like Bobby Heenan, he got me.
A million times, and it's incredible.
So, to say nothing of the one of the most like used sentences for me on social media, which is just people, when people imitate Jim Ross, they are specifically imitating him calling that match where he is pretty sure they murdered his friend Michael Foley. Like the my God, they killed him. They broke him in half. Like everyone's always says, the by God, they broke him in half. That's from that match. Like, because he lit, and that was his actual real reaction was, oh my God, they killed him. Because how could he not have died? How did he not die? We'll get there. All right, we're getting years ahead of ourselves, folks. Yeah. Okay. But yes, needless to say,
so like even just from like cultural osmosis, like we know that happens.
Yeah, like, and it starts here.
But we know that it happens, and had no idea that, like, not only was it like a long setup, but it was Mankind's first episode starts this arc. It's not like these two characters exist for a while and then eventually they develop a feud. Yeah. It's like, boom, day one, I'm gonna throw you off.
That's well, right? Someday I'm going to kill you. Well, no, but that's on purpose. They brought Mick in because they needed a new big monster heel for Taker. I think the thing that people don't necessarily think of is that like Mick Foley's like a bigger dude. Like he's taller. He is like a bigger guy. And like, and Taker's real big. And they're like, well, we need like a bigger guy who can work. And he showed us in that match, he'll throw himself around. It doesn't matter. He's a big guy. And he shows us here, like, this is all legendary. As is the running elbow off the apron that he fully hits to the floor on Taker. That was his finisher for years. And it's probably why his hips are so fucked now. Because you're just throwing your hip at a cement floor repeatedly every night. And yeah, like,
that's not healthy.
Yeah, it's not good. But it looked cool as hell. And Taker is actually selling it, which is new. And that's the thing. Like, this, all of a sudden, here's this guy who might actually be able to beat the Undertaker and make him feel pain. And like, that was what they were missing. And so the reason that he starts boom right away is because that's why he was brought in. They hired him specifically to have a feud with Taker to try to get Taker out of this slump. And all they know is that we need a monster heel. We want him to be the babyface, so we need a monster heel to go against him. But who?
They did it.
Yeah, but like it wouldn't have if it wasn't Mick. Mick nailed it, because like, what do you do to be a monster heel against a literal undead lich? How are you a monster to a monster? And and Mick decided, well, I'm going to show you the monster of literally humanity and mankind, and I'm going to be a deeply traumatized, deeply traumatized person who shows my love for the world by causing pain. Have a nice day. Like, I'm going to, he describes these horrible things he's going to do to you and ends it with have a nice day. And like, I've talked about before, like, one of the reasons that Mankind was so important to me is that he was clearly fucking crazy. And like, I didn't, as a kid, I didn't have the words for it, but I knew I was some sort of crazy, you know, I didn't know what. You know, but, and they were leaning into that, but he did it because he's so good. Like you said earlier, like Brando just coming in, like really making you feel the torment that this guy has felt. Yeah. And then later on, again, I didn't mean for this, but you know, you're the first system that we've had on the show. And I bring you in on Foley's first night. And later he does the three faces of Foley. So like, I love when a plan I didn't have comes together, and like that, that didn't start as a problematic '90s take on DID and that sort of thing. It started more as he had these different personas that he could switch into, and like they tried to explain it that way, but it never really. I feel like at the time as I was watching it and now looking back on, because I've looked back on some of that stuff because I love it so much, it didn't matter. And I don't think it really mattered to the fans. They didn't need him to be crazy. They just loved that he could go from Mankind to Cactus Jack to do love because he was that good. And we just as fans appreciated that he was so good that he could take the mask off and rip his shirt off and have the Cactus Jack shirt underneath. And Triple H looks like he's super scared and sells it. Yeah. And that's the magic of wrestling, that he is scared because he changed his shirt. Because Mick Foley is so good that you actually believe that Cactus Jack is going to murder you now. So, like, I love Mankind so much. And I'm so happy you're here for this show. And it's just, but yeah, that's Raw. It was a roller coaster of emotion. I was sad. I was disgusted. I was disgusted again. I was sad again. I was happy again. Like,
it was fantastic. And like, seriously, like, we're really glad we went Nitro first, because ending on that particular match from Raw is, I mean, it was really great. And just knowing, you know, just the foreknowledge of what comes next.
Yeah. Know? No, even I was so jazzed.
Not being a wrestling fan, like, just knowing that this thing is going to happen. Yeah. This incredible touchstone moment for everyone who was alive at that time of conscious age. You knew that that thing happened.
Right?
Everyone talked about it at school the next day.
Fucking
and A. Everyone pretended they saw it if they didn't.
Yep. It's still...
You heard about it before school. Right, yep. Like in third grade or whatever. You heard everyone talking about it before school, and by lunchtime, you're like, "Yeah, wasn't that fucking wild?"
Like, and Mick talks about it. It's still the number one thing people talk to him, ask him about when they meet him. They
what
all
the ask, fuck else are you going to ask him about?
Yeah, obviously,
there's a million things to ask him about, but like, if you've got 1 minute to talk to Mick Foley.
Yeah, like, you're going to want to ask him about that.
I need
that.
To talk to you about that time that you were definitely dead.
Yeah. And I personally, like I said, I have a strong personal connection to that match because I watched it live in a very funny circumstance. And like, it was so huge to me, and Mick was so huge to me. And I'm really looking forward to kind of doing a deeper dive than I usually do when we get to the lead up.
How far out are we from that?
Oh, well, King of the Ring 1996 is coming up, which is when Stone Cold does the first Austin 316 and really kicks off Stone Cold being Stone Cold. That, I think, is a couple months from now. That's like maybe a month or so from now. So it would be 2 years from that. So we are literally like 2 years and a couple months from that flying off the cage. But I mean, how can you not? And I'd say all that to say, I want to move on from it, because otherwise I will talk for an hour about that match. And I will talk for an hour about that match about 2 years and 2 months from now. So come back. In the meantime, we got right.
Seriously, would fucking love.
Oh, I should. I will totally bring you back for the lead up to that, and you should totally be a guest on the Patreon when we do the watch party of the. I think it's the 98 Royal Rumble where he enters the Royal Rumble three times. Once as Mankind, once as Cactus Jack, and once as Dude Love. And it is one of people. It's one of those things where like people sometimes like to shit on like goofy gimmicks and like supernatural gimmicks or things like that. The crowd loses their shit because they know the execution is going to be so flawless, and it is. And I watched that too. I was lucky enough to watch that too live as a kid because my parents had a good year in 98. And it was unreal. It was the coolest thing I'd ever fucking seen in my entire life at that point. So come back for that. But before that, I have two more questions I asked folks at the end. Did you have a favorite match of the week?
The obvious answer is definitely the Undertaker. Like, Mankind taking out the Undertaker at the end.
A match, but it's the highlight of it. I was going to say, my match of the week was the Mankind match.
It's hard to top that. It really is hard to top that.
I think mine is just the Mankind match because, like, even though it was just him versus a jobber Holly, like, he did.
Yep.
It would agree.
Yeah. If that's not a match, then tagging it back to just like anytime Mick Foley is on my fucking television screen, I'm going to fucking pay attention.
And he knew he had to make an impression, and he came out there and gave the 110% Mick Foley, you know,
and he crushed it.
It's so good.
Yeah. All the other matches, they all had their high points and low points. But I mean, yeah, you got to like. Match one of Raw was, I mean, that was something else. That was, didn't realize until like as it was going on, I was like, oh, we're watching history right now. This is great. And oh, wow, history lives up.
Yeah. You that's, like, you know, now, say that's the thing. It's not just like you're watching history, but it fucks. Like, it really, it's great to, because I've had moments just, we're only 31 episodes into this adventure, but already I've had moments where I was like, I'm watching history, but it's whatever. You know, and this was like, I'm watching history and I'm fucking jazzed. Like, I am popping.
Yeah, we are just fucking leaning in. And all of a sudden, it's like, oh, okay. Like, because, and probably wouldn't have been if put into it live at that era.
Yeah.
Because right? couldn't get into, like, because tried. Like, we tried. We really did. We had friends that wrestling and we tried, and there were certain points where, again, like mentioned, it's like, no, I can't believe in a necromancer, so I can't believe in any of this. You're not taking any of this shit seriously.
Yeah, but they had me at gold dust. Basically, I was like, wait a minute, you're telling me a guy can look like that, so you're telling me there's a chance? We joke about there were always signs that Vince McMahon was a piece of shit. You know, like he says and does things where it's like, oh, there were signs. But yeah, I guess that joke literally comes from me looking back on my life and looking back on my appreciation of wrestling and going, well, yeah, I'm a trans woman. There were signs. Like, you know, like are you kidding me?
Obviously you've seen it. Like, we've made the joke a million times on Blue Sky. It's like, no, of course we're fucking masculine as a young boy and young man, like all of our favorite masculine heroes, you know, David Bowie, Prince, Beck, you know, all
for
of
me those... was, you know, Goldust, Shawn Michaels, who I'm pretty, you know, only because I don't like him as a person do I not say estrogen would have saved her, because he doesn't deserve it. But yeah, like other than that, absolutely, like, holy that, shit.
Like one of the most comfort fooding things is just watching Eddie Izzard's Dressed to Kill.
Oh,
like,
hell yes. Oh, like, fuck right. yes, Susie.
And then like thinking back, like, oh yeah, that was like one of our favorite male role models.
No, same. No, I still, the first time I saw that shit. That
there
shit's...
were signs.
Oh my god! I said that on Blue Sky recently. Like, I still use bits from that as lines against assholes. Like, it's someone has said to me, like, "Are you wearing a woman's clothes?" I'm like, "No, I'm not wearing a woman's clothes. They're my clothes. I bought them." That's a Susie Izzard line from like the early 90s. Like,
I bought them. Like, what the fuck are you talking about?
I bought them. You know, I'm like, fuck yeah. So the other question, right? The other question, though, I think we're probably on agreement here because of whatever the fuck happened in Nitro. I usually ask who won this week. I think Raw won this week.
Yeah.
In spite of itself.
Like,
yeah.
I mean, even if everything had gone right with Nitro this week, Raw won just from sheer, like, everything.
Because Mick Foley came out and kicked ass. Mick Foley,
and also because cannot be objective, right? Yeah. Cannot be. We can't go back into 1996, right? We can't go travel back into 1996 and not know what happened. Right.
Yes, I'm not trying.
No matter what, we know what's coming.
Yes, like, and I would never. That's not what this show is. Like, I want to like make that like I'm not here to give you like a clear analysis of this entertainment and look and put in a rubric and do the science and say this was a 10-star match. No. Silly shit made me pop and made me giggle and happy. That's it. Like, that's all I can. Like, whatever won is whatever made me the happiest this week. And it was probably Raw. Yeah.
Raw won across the board from Mankind doing Mankind's thing to like whatever the fuck was going on with Triple H and Sable. Like, all of that was just fucking weird. It's like, I'm leaning in. I don't know why. This is fucking bizarre.
Chris Candido did pretty shit in an awful match, you know? So it's like, even the bad stuff was still Chris Candido. So fuck yeah. Thank you for coming this week for what was a really...
Seriously, thank you for having us. This was fantastic.
Excellent. Yeah. Just what a fucking week. You really... I was going to say you picked a good one, but you didn't pick. I drew you out of a...
I'm not picking at all. You said, okay. It's like we get it vaguely. So sweet. Let's go.
Sometimes people on Blue Sky be like, how do I get on the podcast? I'm like, well, just from saying that, I put you on the list. I mean, like, it's not hard. Being on the podcast is a
lifelong goal to be a friend of the pod.
Yes, y'all are definitely friends of the pod.
Achieving this is big.
Abso-fucking-lutely. And like, oh, so good. So yeah, you can definitely come back. And in the meantime, though, do you have anything you want to promote? Places for people to find you? You are an amazing artist, and people should go send money and buy stuff from you. We have a coffee mug from you.
I'm at our shops at moxiest.art, so moxiest .art. Fun typewritery things. If you follow us on Blue Sky, we're at moxiest.art, and you know, kind of walking that line between fun art and shitposts and angry leftist ranting. So
that's the line.
That's really all we got.
Yes, that I walk the line indeed. Yes. Fuck yeah. Awesome. Everyone go do the things. Go follow Mox. Go give Mox money. Go enjoy Mox's art. Every week there's a Craig. Sometimes there's elephants. There's serious shit too, and it's all good.
Elephants every morning. I mean, at the very least, if nothing else, you will see a doodle of an elephant every morning, and it will make your day.
It makes
or not.
Day. Yes.
Who knows?
You inspired us to make a Garrick elephant that one time. That was fun.
You subbed in for us, and that's fantastic.
Everybody's got an elephant on occasion.
It's great.
It's good. And thank y'all for hanging out and listening to us for 31 fucking episodes now. It's really weird. Thank y'all for dealing with the weirdness of we switched podcast hosts, and like it's been confusion with the old feed and some people aren't getting new episodes. It should be mostly worked out now. I highly recommend that if you followed us on your podcatcher before, to unfollow us and then research in your podcatcher for the show and refollow us, and that should be the new feed if you're having trouble. So a little bit of housekeeping. I don't normally have to do housekeeping. I'm sweeping up here because we made a mess getting out of Pinecast. I like the new host a lot better, but this has been like, other things though. On top of that, speaking of podcasts, we are part of a podcast network called Ghost Coast Studios. And It's a podcast network that me and co-workers at Ghost Coast Video have started, and lots of famously former podcasters, people who still podcast, a lot of people know, wonderful shit poster Kennedy Cooper, friend of the pod, and also my kind of boss, Hull has a new podcast out for our network. Just got released this week. They released 5 episodes right away, and I'm episode number 4. So I want to make sure to give a plug. It's called The Most Important Election of Our Lives. The concept is, you know, they tell us to vote, and they tell us to vote and only vote. So the people at Most Important Election of Our Lives have decided they're going to lean into it, and we are now voting every week. We are never not voting. So in order to make that happen, they take fictional characters and real life politicians and place them into hypothetical elections against each other in election scenarios and see how it goes. The episode I was on was we took real life wrestling politicians or wrestlers that became politicians versus the Addams Family. It was fantastic. I highly recommend it. There's been some good ones. There's Political Dynasties versus King of the Hill with Donovan from Radio Free Topeg. Also go check them out. So it's a good time. There will be more stuff coming out every week. Again, I'm biased because I was on it, and also I edit the damn thing. So, but go check it out. It's on all the pod places. It's been super fun making that, and I'm excited that it's finally out. It's always fun when you have a job where your boss, you come to your boss and you say, hey, I found a really good theme song for your election show. Kind of sounds like West Wing orchestral pomp and circumstance. And they're like, yeah, that's great. And then they listen to it and they go, what if there was a trap beat? And I was like, you know, I can actually do that. I love my job sometimes.
Everything gets more exciting with a trap beat.
Yes, even West Wing politics. So go check that
out. One day someone was sitting around in the office and someone was like, hey, you know the Lavender Town theme from Pokemon? I'm like, yeah, like I put a trap beat to it. Like, let's listen to that. And that was just the soundtrack of the day.
I need that in my veins. Not even kidding, that sounds amazing. But yes, fantastic. Go check that out. And also, you can, of course, as always, find us on Blue Sky because we live there at mnffpod.bsky.social. Not even, I was gonna say, do I even mention the Instagram? No, I've been talking shit on it. It's still there because they make it so hard to delete, but I'm never updating it again. Fuck them. Zuck a fuck. But if you do want to join us, the Patreon, where we do watch parties of the pay-per-views and occasionally extended interviews, things like that. Sometimes people, we get together and talk, and we just, after a while, we have so much things to talk about besides these 2 episodes of wrestling. We'll do a little more, you know? So that kind of stuff. That's at patreon.com/mnffpod. Oh, what an outro. I had so many things to tell you about. otherwise, we will see y'all next time. Again, thank you for being here for more Raw versus Nitro on Monday Night Fake Fights. Okay, bye.
Ghost Coast Studios. Thanks for listening.